Blog Talk Radio.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger Infidels Are Watching with your host, Cal Fritzy. I have a very great show today, and I know you're going to enjoy it. I am very excited, first of all. My friend, Anne, is going to join me at 4 p.m. in an hour, and we are going to discuss her artwork and her being an excellent spokesperson for those with disabilities and how she is making a difference. If you look above the show highlights, you're going to see the slides that I put in there. There is a slide in there, Fritzy's Place. Anne made that for me, and Anne can make one for you. I'm so happy that she is willing to give up some of her precious time to join me on this program. Like I say, she will be here at 4 p.m. But we have quite the developments going on out there, don't we? My goodness. I really want to talk to you about what's going on in Egypt and what the Egyptian people have done. I'm very, very heartened that the Egyptian people said no to Mohamed Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Sharia law. I know a lot of people are like, well, what were they, you know, they voted this guy in, it was the first democratic election, and they voted him in, and now they ousted him, and what's going on? Well, what happened is that when Mohamed Morsi was elected in a democratic election, quote unquote, the people were hoping for reformation in Egypt. And what happened instead is that Morsi reverted right back to his old ways via the Muslim Brotherhood. And he was trying to impose Sharia law. He wanted to rewrite the constitution, and the Egyptian people saw that as him turning himself into a dictator. That is not what they voted for. Thus, they ousted him. And the army is sitting there. The Republican Guard is now sitting there. There are a lot of things, though, that have been going on over, well, since I talked with you on Friday. Today, the Republican Guard, they opened fire, and they killed at least 51 people today. What they were doing, they were looking, Mohamed Morsi was holed up in this mosque, and they want him. So they went in, literally, with both barrels, trying to get this guy, and they took out 51 people in the interim. There are over 430 people wounded at this point. The Muslim Brotherhood, they're vowing, though, that they're going to take back Egypt. They are determined that Egypt will be returned into the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood. But you know what? I don't think it's going to happen. This is very, very bloody. It's going to get very bloody, much more so than it is right now. But the people of Egypt, they're standing up. They're saying, we don't want Sharia law. We don't want the Muslim Brotherhood to rule us. They do want democracy. The Muslim people want democracy, and this is what they're fighting for, and they are literally fighting with their lives. Now, like I say, will the restoration take place? Well, do we have a choice in not helping it to be restored? Egypt was a beautiful country once upon a time, long ago. It was a prosperous country. It fell economically, though, under the hands of certain governments. When King Farouk was ousted in the 1950s, Egypt actually enjoyed one of the best economies on the planet. Today, it can't even compete with South Korea. So have these governments worked? Has the Muslim Brotherhood worked? Morsi was supposed to change that. Morsi did not deliver. Instead, Morsi wanted to oppress the people of Egypt even further. I saw this coming, though, a year ago when they had the elections. When I saw Mohamed Morsi on the ballot, I went, no, 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 don't do it. Don't do it. But they really did have faith in hope and change. But where have we heard that before? Barack Hussein Obama. Yep. He promised to transform America in his election campaign. And boy, he sure did. Morsi, he promised the same thing and went down the same devastating road. So the people of Egypt, they stood up. They said, no. I am very, very proud of the people of Egypt. And I have a clip here I want to share with you. And this is courtesy of Jan A. England. She is the founder and division leader of the Christian Defense League. She posted this, and I really want to share it with you. This is a message to Barack Hussein Obama.
Dear Mr. Obama, I'm talking to you today on behalf of a lot of Egyptians who want to deliver a message not only for you, for all the American citizens. Leave us alone. All the families in Egypt want to tell you this message. Leave Egypt alone. Please, Mr. Obama. And stop supporting the terrorists. Stop supporting the friends of Omar Abdulrahman, the terrorist who killed lots of Americans. Stop supporting the allies of Ayman al-Zawahiri, of Pakistan, of Taliban. You are giving them the full support by calling what's happening in Egypt a military coup. It's not a military coup. It's a revolution done by a civilized people, civilized Egyptians, who are counted officially more than 30 million. If you don't know, and I don't know, the media showed Mohamed Yusuf Morsi was actually calling his people for violence, for blood in the streets. And these fanatics and these Islamic supporters of him are blindly following him. These Islamic people are the ones who celebrated the killing of the American ambassador in Libya. They went in the streets and they were celebrating it. These people who Mr. Obama is supporting are the people who are in their prayers asking God to destroy the United States. Yes, these are the people that Mr. Obama is supporting. Mr. Obama, face the fact and tell your people that what happened in Egypt was a real revolution against the tyrant called Mohamed Morsi, against the regime. Our army is our shield, and we don't want to be in a state of war with the United States. We don't want this. We are friends of the United States. We are friends with the whole world. From 85 million Egyptians, I'm sending you this message of love and peace and asking you, Mr. Obama, to stop supporting Mohamed Morsi and the other terrorists in Egypt. We are the Egyptians, and this is our revolution. We believe in our Egypt, and we respect the Americans, and we respect your country, so please respect our country and respect our freedom. We called for this freedom, and we will die for it. Egyptians and the army are one. We made it, and the army supported us. You also, Americans, should support us. I'm sending you this message of peace and love and prayers. Pray for Egypt.
Like I say, I want to thank Jan A. England for that. You heard what this gentleman said. He was speaking to Barack Hussein Obama. Leave us alone. And I could not agree more. We have to start letting these people find their own destinies and create a dynasty, a democracy, true freedom. This is what I try to do when I do this show and I talk with you. I do not hate Muslims, but I despise Islam. I hate everything about Islam. I have hope for the people of Egypt. Maybe a lot of you out there will not agree with this, but what that gentleman said, what I related to you, is true. It was a revolution. And they want to be left alone to rebuild their country. They want to be the proud Egypt, one of the oldest dynasties in the Middle East. Leave them alone, Barack Hussein Obama, and let them do it. The people have spoken. They rose up, and they are taking their country back from the Muslim Brotherhood, Sharia law. Leave them alone. I am hoping that this development in Egypt will mean that we will have a worldwide awakening within Islam, that the Islamists will understand that Sharia will not be tolerated. I have always said that I do not believe that Islam will be reformed in my lifetime. Islam has been stuck on stupid since the 7th century. We all know that, and I am not naive. I know what Islam is. I also know, though, that there are a lot of people who are held hostage under this false religion. They're afraid. But maybe the people of Egypt can offer us some hope that, yes, there are those out there standing up. Maybe I'm dreaming, but I would love to see our actual reformation take place within Islam. But like I say, I don't know. But to the people of Egypt, I say to you, I wish you nothing but the best to carry on and engage in your reformation and move forward and join the 21st century, as so many of you strive to do. So that is what is going on in Egypt. There's a lot of news out there going on right now. There is one thing I did want to share with you, and that is the tragedy that Quebec, Canada, suffered this week. And that is the train derailment. There are about 40 people still unaccounted for. If you're not familiar with what happened in Quebec, there was a train. It had 72 oil tanker cars on it, and it derailed. It literally fell into the laps of a town. 40 people literally were evaporated. It's still a hot site. We do not know when and how we're even going to account for the missing. But one thing I have to tell you, this is a very, very, very small community in which this train derailed. It's the type of community where everybody knows your name. This is the little community, Lac Magnetic. But when you don't hear from your friend for days in that tiny little community, and he is listed as missing, you know he's not coming back. The official death toll, however, it remains at 5. But still, 40 people are unaccounted for. Like I say, this train literally blew an area to smithereens. The blast radius is unbelievable. So I just want to share with you that I am praying for that tiny little community, Lac Magnetic, and I am praying for the loved ones of the 40 people who are not coming back. Like I say, it's such a hot zone that investigators, they still cannot go in to discover exactly how this tragedy occurred. They have recovered the black boxes, though, of the train, and they will be investigating those black boxes. I believe there were 2 black boxes they recovered. So they, of course, will be going through the data for that. But I am telling you, ladies and gentlemen, the tragedies that are going on out there. We had that flight in the United States. I believe that was Asiana was the flight, was the carrier. People died in that. And now it is being disclosed that one of the people who died in that was run over by an emergency vehicle. Like I say, the news, it's coming in very fast, very furious. I'm doing my best to keep on top of it. But like I say, what's going on out there? Tragedies everywhere. But like I say, again, is that I am hoping that I bring you good news in terms of what is happening in Egypt and what the people are doing. The people are speaking. The people have spoken. But then, you know, you open up your national dailies and you read these stories, train derailments, airplanes crashing, people dying in Egypt. It's just never really a good week. But this is what we have to deal with. This is what we call the human condition. This is what we live with. If you could see the photos, though, of Black Magnetic in Quebec, it is devastating. As a matter of fact, I have a link here. And I am going to post it in the chat room for you right now so that you can see what's going on. There you go. Yeah, and Anne in the chat room brings up a really good point. Syria. What's been going on in Syria? I talked about Syria on my show, I think about 3 weeks ago. You can probably go to my main page and scroll down. It's titled Syrians Are Selling Their Daughters. Yeah, I discussed that. I spent a lot of time on that topic, definitely, because of what the people of Syria are also undergoing. The exodus of the Syrian people. Jordan, of course, is the largest recipient of the refugees, and they're living in camps. They can't work. They can't leave those camps. They are literally selling their daughters, 14-year-olds, to old men, because that is the only way they can survive and eat. This is the human condition that we have to change. We have to start understanding that Islam is a deadly force, and look what it does to the people. It holds hostage. They're selling their daughters to 70-year-olds because they're starving. That is Islam. That's what I fight. People think, oh, you're an Islamophobe. No, I'm not an Islamophobe. I'm not afraid of Islam. Islam, actually, is afraid of me because I have a big mouth and I use it. And I tell you what the atrocities of Islam is. I don't think Islam should even exist at all. I would like to see Islam eradicated as a political entity, which it is, and the theocracy, which it represents, because that is Islam. Islam is the big lie. Roger, you're right. Islam is the biggest farce thrown at us from the annals of history. Muhammad was insane. By today's standards, Muhammad would be considered clinically insane. I think he was. There are reports that he had epilepsy and would have seizures, and that this is perhaps, how should I put this? Well, let's just say the man was delusional. He thought angels spoke to him, but how convenient were those angels when Muhammad wanted to switch things around? When he went into Mecca and Medina, he was bloodthirsty. He was a bloody warrior. I don't even like calling him a warrior, because true warriors fight for justice and freedom. This man did neither. He went in simply to conquer. The start of the global caliphate. That is Muhammad's legacy. His legacy is that of death, destruction, violence, and the subjugation of women and children. That is Islam. Do you know, I was talking with a friend the other day, and I said to him, I said, do you know we're not allowed to go to Mecca? And he said, what do you mean? I said, we're not Muslims. We're not allowed anywhere near Mecca. He said, why is that? I said, because we're infidels. And he was, really? I said, yeah, we're infidels. So I sent him a screenshot of the Mecca highway. I think everybody has seen that. Straight away, Muslims, off-ramp, non-Muslims, who must acknowledge that they cannot travel any further down the Mecca highway because they are getting a little too close to the Kaaba, which, by the way, is a meteorite. Did you know that? The Kaaba? It's a big old meteorite. Yeah, they run around a big old meteorite, this black thing. Run around, place their hand on it, go around in the little circles. Yeah, that's what they worship, a rock from space. Oh, I'm telling you, Islam, it's always a pleasure to discuss with them. And something else, too. Ramalama Ding Dong is coming up again. I think Ramadan is starting, I believe, next week or something. I don't know. They go by the lunar calendar, so it changes every year. Sometimes it might be in November, sometimes it might be in September. I think it's coming up in July of this year. I really should start writing these little things down, shouldn't I? But Ramadan is approaching, so look for the slides of the animals being slaughtered in the middle of the streets again this year, because that's halal. I want to tell you something. I don't think I've ever shared this with you. Don't know if I did. I might have maybe a year ago. I'm not too sure. But do you know, because, well, Canada, with its enforced multiculturalism, we take in a lot of people from all over the globe, and I am proud to celebrate cultures. But I do not like the enforced multiculturalism, because what that includes is that with official multiculturalism, that means all cultures are equal under our Constitution. But you know what? We know that's not true. We know there are cultures that are less equal than others, and the culture of Islam is one of them. But like I say, Canada, technically, we welcome cultures from all over the planet, and of course, we include that one culture under Islam. But in Ontario, they had to enact a law making it illegal to slaughter farm animals in your bathrooms. I'm not kidding you. Because what was happening, Ramadan, when it came along every year, there would be people buying goats from farms and taking them home and slaughtering them in their bathtubs. And people in apartment buildings. And people were wondering what's happening with their drinking water and stuff. Because, I mean, this stuff is... The gore is going down the drains, of course, and it was it was going to the treatment centers. But people were wondering, what is going on? My water, it looks weird. So they investigated, and the pipes were literally clogged. So Ontario had to pass a bylaw or a law stating that it is illegal to slaughter farm animals in your homes. They were doing this in the Toronto apartments they were living in. That's a Ramadan. Ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong. It got so bad that Ontario finally established stations where Muslims could take their sacrificial animal to these stations and have their animals slaughtered properly. If you know what I mean, properly. Wink, wink. Halal. Wow. Do not eat halal because the cruelty in the slaughter of the animals is unreal. But yeah, they had to set up I call them slaughter stations in various areas around the province. Well, of course, anything below the 401. My Canadian friends will get that reference. To avoid them slaughtering the animals themselves. Now, I'm just waiting for the next story to read in, say, the Toronto Sun about how two Muslims were caught in a city park slaughtering a lamb under the moon. Yeah, that happens. I cannot believe it. Yeah. This is how backwards Islam is. They come over here to Canada or the United States or the UK, Sweden, Australia, wherever. And they bring that 7th century ideology with them. The 21st century, and they're slaughtering goats in our city parks under the moon to celebrate the end of Ramadan and the big feast. And what up with that, anyway? I don't get it. You can't eat during the day. You can't drink. Wonder what they do with the saliva. What do? Spit that out? I think it's interesting. Ramadan. But like I'm just sharing with you, this is one of the manifestations of that lovely holiday called Ramadan. Ramadana, ding-dong, ding-along, ding-a-ling, long-long, Ramadan. All right, I think I'm going to move along. I actually have something here I want to share with you as well. This is interesting. I was listening to Firefox News Online the other night, and he brought this up on his show, and that is host George Sincer. He brought this up on his show. And this regards Muslim terrorists and how they are entering the United States via the southern border. We know it's going on. We know Muslims, Islamists, are entering the United States via Mexico. We've known that for a long time. And call me a conspiracy theorist, but I think that's part of the reason why Obama will not defend that border. These Islamists, they fly into Mexico after, of course, mastering Spanish and getting their vocal allocutions down to a T. They enter the United States illegally. Now, a lot of Mexicans, there are genuine Mexicans, of course, we know, are crossing that border illegally into the United States. But they were usually coming in groups, like maybe 12 people, 13 people, and they usually have a guide or a coyote that bring them in. Once in a while, though, the odd ones get in and they're alone. They don't have that coyote. They don't have that paid guide. So, like I say, maybe I have my tin hat on today, but my conspiracy is that, yeah, those are the Muslims and those are the people that Obama is embracing. Obama, he wants to... I don't know, what on earth is that man up to down there anyway? I have no idea what he's doing. But this amnesty that he wants to expand on, as it were, he's going to reward illegals. And a lot of people automatically go, oh, the Mexicans. But you know what? It's every illegal. And that could be the Islamists who are also crossing through the southern border. For two generations, the southern border has not been properly defended. Two generations. And it is believed that thousands of extremist jihadis are coming over into the United States via that border. How many terror cells do you think have been formed due to these potential terrorists? How many have been formed in the United States? How many do you think? And I don't mean the recognized terrorists, cells like the Council of American Islamic Spit Relations. No, I mean the terrorist cells. Do you know how many terrorist cells are in the United States and Canada and, of course, in the UK at this point? It is amazing. There are a lot of them. There was a report from Channel 2 News out of Atlanta that documented the Islamic issue. And they did quite a good job of doing it. It is unbelievable. I think if I'm really, really good and my computer really likes me, I think I can find that.
Nearly 9 years after.
And guess what? I did. Channel 2 News from Atlanta. And believe it or not, mainstream media. They did an exposé on this in 2010. I'm just wondering if today the mainstream media would do the same. But like I say, I did find the clip. My computer does like me. So take a listen to this.
Nearly 9 years after 9/11, the United States is still facing a major terror threat. You may be surprised to learn who agents are catching trying to cross the border from Mexico. We reviewed congressional reports and traveled to the Southwest to find a threat that affects us here in Metro Atlanta. The Border Patrol uses choppers, ATVs, and horses to patrol the 2,000-mile Southwest border. Most of the illegals caught crossing are from Mexico or South America, but thousands are classified as OTMs, other than Mexicans, including hundreds from nations that sponsor terror. These are the records we obtained at this federal detention center near Phoenix, Arizona. We found illegals from Afghanistan, Egypt, Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, Sudan, and Yemen in custody.
We have left the back door to the United States open.
Former Arizona Congressman J.D. Hayworth has seen the intelligence reports.
And we have to understand that there are people who definitely mean to do us harm who have crossed that border.
This Arizona rancher doesn't want to be identified because he fears the Mexican cartels who smuggle drugs and people near his property. This Muslim prayer rug was found on his ranch.
Just one more indicator that there's a whole lot more than just a few poor Mexicans coming into the United States.
There's more. This congressional report on border threats confirms members of Hezbollah have crossed the southwest border. It also contains photos of military jackets found on the border. The Arab insignia reads, Martyr, Way to Eternal Life. The other depicts a plane crashing into the Twin Towers.
The American public has been kept in the dark about this whole issue.
Dave Stoddard was a Border Patrol agent for 20 years. He worries about the dangerous people who get through and may be living among us.
In my experience, for every one apprehended, there was at least 10 that would escape apprehension.
The congressional report also reveals the route Middle Easterners take. They travel from Europe to South America to the tri-border region, where they learn to speak Spanish, then travel to Mexico and blend in with other illegals heading to this country.
One of the world's most wanted terrorists was actually spotted in Atlanta, and speculation is that he came up through the mountains into this country through the Mexican border.
Adnan Shirkajuma is a Saudi Arabian pilot and bomb expert with a $5 million bounty on his head. Federal agents verified he spent time in Atlanta just prior to 9/11 and left on a bus. In 2004, Shirkajuma was one of seven Al-Qaeda members the feds were looking for after they were spotted in Central America and believed to be heading for the U.S. The most grave concern from the congressional report that Mexican drug cartels will help terrorists smuggle weapons across remote border crossings.
Because if we learn nothing from 9/11, certainly we should have learned that borders are important.
And former Arizona Governor Janet Napolitano is now Secretary of Homeland Security. We wanted to ask her about the border threat, but our request for an interview was never answered.
Well, I wonder why that was, But like I say, this was from Channel 2 News Atlanta on May 10th of 2010, and I put the link in the chat room for you. And it's interesting, there are some comments accompanying this YouTube video, and this one is interesting. It's all intentional. Obama needs martyrs for his civilian security force. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that, insightful? I have to give the commenter credit for that one. And that rancher in that video that you just heard. Do you know that there was a rancher, and I can't remember his name. I wish I could, who was murdered by migrants, illegals coming across. He was a good Christian man. He would even try to help the migrants, because a lot of them, of course, would be hungry and they would be thirsty. Now, he went out one day in his pickup truck with his dog to do a check around his ranch, his vast ranch, checking the fence posts, making sure the animals were, you know, okay. And he came across a group, but it wasn't even a group. It was one individual. He came across this guy. Like I say, a good Christian man. He would make sure his well was accessible for those who were thirsty. But he came across this one individual, this illegal. He got out his cell phone to call the... I don't know who he was calling. It wasn't really clear. I do know though, that he was calling his brother to say that he would meet him at some point on the property. Maybe that's what he was doing. Maybe he was calling his brother to say, I'm at this location, and I'll see you here, I don't know, Bob, 4 p.m. But this lone individual, the illegal, killed him. And he killed the dog. That was his reward for helping people. That's why the ranchers are afraid to really say anything to anybody anymore. Because of this one particular rancher. And like I say, you know, my computer, please be nice to me. I'm going to see if I cannot find his name, because I think I'm not doing the story justice in not relating to you who he was. And here it was. I found it. His name was Robert Crench. Like I say, Robert Crench was a Christian man who tried to help his fellow man. It was theft, robbery, vandalism, and drug smuggling that has always been an issue with illegal immigration in this particular county in which this gentleman lived. And that's right. Robert Crench. I think we have to be very, very mindful of what is going on out there in terms of that border, ladies and gentlemen. It is not only a threat to the United States proper as a people and as you, the taxpayer, who are paying for all these illegals living there, but it is a threat to the very security of that country. Please, please make sure that border is protected. Something else, too, is that Canada is noticing quite an exodus of Mexicans coming up here. There are, and this is not the fault of the United States, this is the fault of the coyotes. They create these enablement programs, these phony enablement programs in which Mexicans pay huge money in which to apply and seek passage to Canada. They come up from Mexico. We get a lot of Cubans, too, who do that. Canada's getting kind of full up. We don't like this. Please, do something about that damn border, Obama. But like I say, this is the havoc that they create. They come over here and they kill U.S. citizens like Robert Crench. Unbelievable. And they even killed his dog. Like, what is that? Well, you know what? I am going to take a bit of a break in a minute because Anne will be joining me in 10 minutes. So I want to give Anne a chance to get a drink of water or whatever she likes, maybe a nice cup of tea. Give her a chance to call into the show, or, of course, she can Skype in. And just to remind you, the guest call-in number is 347-237-4318, or you can hit the what does the React say? The skippity Skype button. You can call in 347-237-4318, or you can Skype in, and you will find both at the very top of the page above the chat room. But I have something here. I always like to ask my guests what their favorite song is, what kind of music do they enjoy. And Anne sent me this, and I'm going to play this for you. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. It's in Hebrew, but I'm going to give you a loose translation of the lyrics so that when you listen to this beautiful song, you will know what this singer is relating to you. This is Shema Israel. The lyrics, when the heart cries, only God hears. The pain rises out of the soul. A man falls down before he sinks down. With a little prayer, he cuts the silence. Shema, hear my prayer. My God, you're omnipotent. You gave me life. You gave me everything. Shema, hear Israel, my God. In my eyes a tear. In the heart cries quietly. And when the heart is quiet, the soul screams. Shema, hear Israel, my God. Now I am alone. Make me strong, my God. Make it that I won't be afraid. The pain is big, and there's nowhere to run away. End it because I cannot take it anymore. Make the end of it because I have no more energy left with me. When the heart cries, time stands still. All of a sudden, the man seeks his entire life. He doesn't want to go into the unknown. He cries to his God right before a big fall. That is Shema Israel. This is a song. It sounds like it's a song of despair, but it really isn't. It's actually a song of hope. Because when you feel you have reached the end of the road and it looks like dark, that darkness that you feel around you, when you feel like that will never lift, you can pray to God. You can ask him to help you. The pain does get big. And sometimes there's nowhere to run away. But the people of Israel, their spirit and their hope shines through. This is why I love this song as well. I'm going to play this for you right now.
כשהלב בוכה, רק אלוקים שומע. הכאב עולה מתוך הנשמה. אדם נופל לפני שהוא שוקע. בתפילה קטנה חותכת הדממה. שמע ישראל אלוקי, אתה כל יכול. נתת לי את חיי, נתת לי הכל. בעיניי דמעה, הלב בוכה בשקט. וכשהלב שותק, הנשמה זועקת. כשהלב בוכה, הזמן עומד מלכת. האדם רואה את כל חייו פתאום. אל הלא נודע, הוא לא רוצה ללכת.
Really hope you enjoyed that beautiful song, Let Shema Israel. Like I say, hope and despair, love and prayers. I am so pleased, though, that my guest is here. Anne Vanderlees, probably one of the warmest, most sweetest people you will ever meet. She's an artist. She does beautiful paintings. She does plaques. Plaques that you can hang in the front of your house. Mine is the Fritzies. And she paints your animals. She immortalizes your pets through her painting. Wonderful work that she does. And she has a Facebook page that I will share with you in a bit. But I'm not keeping Anne waiting any longer. I am bringing Anne on right now, and she can fill you in. Anne, hi.
Hey there,
how
lady.
Are you, my girl? Hey, how are you?
I tell you, I had a bad night. It stormed all night long, and my internet was out for 7 hours. I was terrified I'd miss the show, and you'd never forgive me.
Oh, the storms have been so bad down there. Have you battened down the hatches?
Well, it's beautiful out now. I got lucky with that one. But Roger woke me up because I had to take a nap because I was up all night. But that's all right. It was more than worth it. It's just hasn't been out for over a year. It would happen to be on the night before your show.
Really? Wouldn't that be, you know? Murphy's Law, that's what I call it.
It shows.
Oh, so how are you, other than that, how are you doing today?
Doing about as good as can be expected. It's a nerve disorder, so what it does is basically my body attacks the nerve cells.
Yeah.
And eats the coatings off of them. So it kind of makes you feel like hamburger. No fun. I wasn't always crippled, though.
I hear ya. You know, I hear ya. And
what
I like.
Before that?
What's that?
Do you know what my job was?
I'm just wondering. Is there? Can you turn up your volume just a little bit? Is that possible?
I don't know. Let me check. To go in under the Skype thing.
You sound a little quiet.
I'll try to speak up because putting up this speaker sure isn't going to help. Is that any better?
A little better. That's okay. People, just lean your head into your speaker. There you go. That's all right. We'll get you. Fine. There you go. But like I say, you are an artist. You do wonderful work. What you do is fantastic. Could fill people in on what exactly you do, why you do it, what inspires you to do it, and how you do it. Because like I say, the work that you do is just beautiful. It is so beautiful, and it's the quality of the artistry is phenomenal. How did you start doing this in particular with the plaques? Turn to you one day and say, hey baby, you're good, do this?
Years ago I made them for camping, and just as gifts for friends and stuff, and for myself, but I was a painter on canvas. I can't do that anymore. I can't sit at a canvas and go ahead and do a nice big painting. I have some pictures that are in there that are, wall size for in the toy room for the kids that have full-size Lion King. I can't do that anymore. So those are nostalgic things, but I think most of it is, if you did a survey in the nursing homes and you said, hey, would you rather be doing something productive, be home, or would you rather be here? I think most of them would rather be home and doing something. And in the old days, that's what they did. They took in sewing, they did crocheting, the men did woodworking, things like that. We got away from that. We stopped doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of teaching children as they grew up, by 10 years old, you could own a business, because in the old days, they could. The founder of this country was a surveyor. He had a job. Might not have what he chose, but, these kids knew what they were doing. Watch any old John Wayne movie, and you can see that. But around the 50s, we decided, instead of teaching children to go out and create a job, build a business, we told them to get a job. And over the course of the years, before I was crippled, I was somebody, believe it or not. In 1997, the company I was working for, Little Papa John's, had just started up here in Wisconsin. And in 1997, it was Franchise of the Year. It was the best franchise in the world because they're international. I was their manager of the year. So I have national paper, and all my priorities was the business. I'm telling you folks, don't do that. That was the wrong priorities. What I'm doing now with these little plaques means more to me than what that job did with 850 employees. Yeah, I provided them with a job, but what did I do, for quality of life in those environments? I wasn't teaching the right things. And Hashem gives every one of us gifts, and we should use them. So, about when I was in the 20s, I was making these plaques. Long about last year, I have a rabbi who was wonderful and kept me from going into a nursing home where the doctors want to put me. And I say no. And he put together a fundraiser by way of doing an auction that kept me on until Hashem decided the right time was, I can do those plaques again right from my hospital bed. And give me something to do that I really can give back, something that people can enjoy and have a better relationship with them than I did with my employees. The best thing I can do is teach people to go ahead and think of the talents that you have. And, of course, I'm competing with those of them that are fully capable of mowing lawns or painting houses or babysitting, that are doing everything they can to get the food stamp.
Yep. Well,
until
I think what you do
something, and then that's when they hurt.
Yeah.
And it hurts them.
I think the work that you do is it's just absolutely beautifully fantastic. Like I say, I have mine proudly displayed in my country kitchen. That is the hub of activity in my house. That's where we do all our entertaining. You'll always find me in the kitchen at parties. That is so true. That's where everybody seems to gather when they come over. We're all in the my big, huge country kitchen, and I have mine displayed prominently on the big wall. And people, they wow, where did you get that? And I am so thrilled to tell them, well, my friend Anne, she has this business. Well, I don't even know what to tell them except to say that she's fantastic. I want to get business cards printed up for you, Anne, so I can just pass them out and say, here, get in touch with her. Because my one brother, for sure, I believe, I don't know if he's gotten in touch with you yet, but he really wants a picture done for him for his two kids. Because it's beautiful. I just love it. Like, wow. Now you are a person with disabilities. How hard is it for you physically to do the work that you do?
Well, I do the cutting up with Mullet. He does do the cutting of the board
mm-hmm.
for me. But I
yeah.
do end up sitting. I can get into the chair and be in there between 20 and 30 minutes before the swelling forces me back into the bed. And if the
mm-hmm.
swelling gets too
yeah.
bad, then I can't move. So I really have no choice but to comply with that. But I'll get up and I'll do the standing and so forth. I put the paints right next to me on the end table. And I hold the plaque in one arm. And when I'm done with it, I grab hold of it by the end and I lean it up against the table so it's, you know, not going to get hurt. And go back and forth with that. Polyurethaning, it really doesn't take long to do that. It's just the dry time that takes a long time to do. So, but it gives me something wonderful to do. I get scared every time I go to do one. But I'm going to mess it
oh,
up.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to be able to have the talent to do it. Every one of them is done with prayer and prayer for the person that I'm making it for. A person. I'm making some for an unborn child right now. And, you know, I don't know what his
yeah.
name is. She doesn't know what his name is yet, but he's going to have a sign with a little Bambi on it. So, but you know,
beautiful.
It without those prayers, I know I really couldn't do that. It's not me. Just like you'll hear from somebody who's a writer and so forth. It's you know I couldn't have written this without you know without God. Colleen Gray, who's one of our favorite friends, in one of the
mm-hmm.
beginnings. Her favorite song, her song that is my favorite, is Say a Prayer. And she is my favorite vocalist. I absolutely love her voice. I don't know what it does. It just grabs hold of my heart. But at the very beginning of it, she says, I felt like I didn't write this song. This song came to me from God. And if we would realize
it is beautiful.
That more, if we'd realize that
it
more,
is just beautiful.
It's done in layers, so at first it looks like blobs. It doesn't look like much of anything at all. You know, it takes about 4 hours just to do the character itself. You're an artist, and you know that. So you start out, and then you layer on a little
yeah.
more, and you add more detail, more definition, and so forth like that. And at the beginning, I'm looking at the kitty, and I love, 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 love little guy. And towards the very, very end,
the one
you would say thank you.
Oh, yeah. The one you did for me with Loki. You said that was probably one of the favorite ones that you ever did because I shared a real heartfelt story with you about my cat, my little Loki, and you were so touched by that you said that painting that literally. Brought tears to your eyes because you knew you were doing this for a person who so deeply loved her sentient being. But you must get a lot of stories from people in that they relate to you, their relationship with their pets, with their sentient beings, whether it be a dog, a cat, for goodness sake, a goldfish. People have real attachments to their animals that they embrace and they love so much. And for you to immortalize them through your paintings is a gift to us. But I am so grateful to you that you were so moved by my little story regarding Loki. And while you were painting my Loki, you had me in your heart and your prayers while you were doing it, Anne.
That was an incredible kitty. And I try to do that with each person that I'm doing a sign for. I'll talk to them about the pet. I just did a black poodle, and they're almost impossible to do, especially to get the dark eyes in there. I had to go back and forth and forth with that to get the eyes so the eyes would show. And I told her, I said, up close, it looks a bit odd. I said, so that at a normal distance, you can see her eyes, otherwise you can't. But it was more important to get the expression and the position. You know, the dog was kind of prancing. I said, I got that from when she was chasing a train in a video around a Christmas tree. You know, you need to get the character of the pet because they're the human being's companion, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That is my favorite, but that one is my favorite.
Oh, sweet. How can people get in touch with you so that they can get their own custom family sign with their pet? How can they get in touch with you? Do you have a website, or I have your Facebook page up there that I posted in the chat room, but do you have a website for those who may not be on Facebook?
Not yet. Somebody said they were going to hook me up with somebody who would design one.
Okay, well, you know what? What I'm going to
chat
with. Oh, there you go. They can get in touch with you via your email account. Perfect. What I'm going to do.
Facebook or through the site on Facebook, Custom Family Pet with, or Sign with Pet.
Perfect. And you've got it in the chat room. And that is Lisa Vanderlees at att.net. So, people, you can get in touch with Lisa that way. You can have your private conversation with her. She will give you all the details on how you can obtain your own custom family sign. Lisa Vanderlees at att.net. And what I'm going to do, Anne, is I'm going to put it in my blog, and everybody knows my blog is Red Fox. Fiddles are watching at redfoxblogger.com. So I'm going to put it in there as well for you.
Thank you so much.
You bet. And so for those of you who are not on Facebook, I will put this information in my blog, and I will do that later on tonight, and it will be there for your edification. Like I say, Lisa Vanderlees at att.net, and I will make sure all the information is there for everybody to get in touch with you, because like I say, what you do is inspirational, and you are a true spokesperson for those with disabilities who are making a difference. You are a wonderful person for what you do. I am so grateful to have you on my humble little program here today to share what you do, the gift that you give to people.
Oh, look what you do. We can't thank you enough for being out there week after week after week, working so hard to try to get the truth out there. You know, that's life.
I'm telling you, I listen to myself some days and I think, my goodness, I'm this big old mouth who mumbles about. And but, Anne, I really do. I really do try to, like, people have to know what's going on in their world.
Well,
and the biggest threat
you guys out there, that's for sure.
Oh, I'm telling you, the biggest threat that we're facing is Islam. I am very close to what's going on out there. I'm acutely aware of this threat, and I just try to have this radio show and talk about it, share the news with the people that they're not getting in the mainstream media, because they're not. We have so many people out there with voices that are relating to us. What Islam is up to, what it's doing. And I am so proud of Israel. I'm very, very proud of that nation. Very proud. That is the only democracy in the Middle East, ladies and gentlemen. That is Israel. A tiny little country with a population less than that of the city of Toronto in Canada. But what a valiant people. What a strong people. What a brave and noble people the people of Israel are. And Anne, I want to relate to you something. I have a friend, and he travels all over the world doing for his company. He does various works. He's kind of like a webmaster, so he's headhunted by companies all over the world. But the company that he works for, they won't let him go. They just lend him out. No, you can't keep him. He's ours. But you can borrow him maybe for a month, and that's what he does. And he spent a month in Israel doing work on some of their software. I don't know what he was doing. I think it was just a company. He was working for a company, and it was in Israel. And I asked him, I said, what's it like being there? What's Israel like? Like, I see pictures and stuff, but wow, you were in Israel for an entire month. And he loved it. He said, you will not believe the wonderful generosity and the spirit of those people. They are fantastic. Like I said, they are a true democracy in the middle of the Middle East. And so I asked him, I said, though, but they have a lot of issues with terrorists, don't they? And he said, well, yeah, they do. And he said, for example, if there is a terror threat, the sirens go off and everybody knows what to do. They know to take cover. And after an hour, the sirens stop. And everybody just comes out again and carries on at business as usual. Like the sirens, when they had the terror alerts, it seems to be just another day in the life of a typical Israeli. And I said, well, how can they live like that? He said, they have no choice. They are defending Israel. This is what they do. This is their country. This is their land. This is their God-given land. And this is what they put up with. But they, like I say, they're such a brave and noble people for them to... I can't even express how I feel about Israel. I am so in awe and so in respect of them taking back what belonged to them in the first place. And have you ever been to Israel?
No. I was actually hoping to retire there.
You know what?
I changed a bit.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I can't travel, unfortunately.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I can't even get in and out of a car. This is my gilded cage. But did you notice something else that's a correlation? You look at the difference between just simply conservatives and progressives. And you could rename them. They match the same way. You can't find conservatives doing anything mean, evil, or wrong. The opposite of true is true, and the hate and nastiness when it comes out of the progressives, you give them their way and they're still mad. You know? And then you got the Israelis, and it's not even just the Jews, but also the Arabs that live there and so forth, their whole attitude is different from the ones that are firing at them. Well, in World War II, Hitler and Stalin, the rest of them, they all used that.
Yeah.
We're doing a repeat again. There was a caliphate where people had to suffer. And I'm just wondering about the people that are in Saudi Arabia and Iran and so forth. that didn't think there was a way out. I'm wondering just how much they're watching Egypt now. When Iran came forward and they were begging for help for the Persian people to get their country straightened back out again and get rid of this Islam, and nobody would help them. And now they're seeing what happened in Egypt.
But yeah.
Suppose we don't know which side is going to be worse, but if you went to Saudi Arabia way back, the women weren't wearing burqas. And they were being educated.
You know, I am telling you, that is the thing about Iran, that the Persian people, that is probably one of the most... I don't know what to call it. Maybe it's one of the biggest tragedies that happened because
Iran,
the Persian people are a beautiful people.
Yep.
Hmm?
I won't call it Iran. I call it Persia. It's occupied Persia.
Yep. Exactly. And the Persians have been there for something like 3,000 years, and then Iran, yeah, and then they were defeated by Iran. Yeah,
well,
the people
knows,
of Persia. Yeah.
Rabbi knows my favorite story is the story of Esther. And put a little pitch out there for Rabbi. He's got a brand new book that just came out on the 4th.
Rabbi. Rabbi A.
Go ahead,
Rabbi,
and read it. It's very enlightening, especially when it comes to your children, because our histories are being changed. And, he corrects me once in a while when I mess up and I'm wrong, because I don't always get my dates and details correct. That's what I have him for. But
oh, bingo. and that's right. And Rabbi A, he has a show right here on Blog Talk Radio that we can go to. He is on hiatus for the summer, though, I believe.
Except for Shabbat.
He still has Shabbat? Okay. I have been very, very naughty in not attending live, but I really do enjoy listening to Rabbi A. He's a wonderful man. And look at that. Rabbi A in the chat room, and he just posted the link to his...
2 seconds. I was just about to hit send.
Look at that. It is called The New Common Sense, addressed to the inhabitants of America on the following interest subjects. That's what I got, Rabbi. Is that right? And that is by Randback. I just want to make sure I got that right, Rabbi. I really don't want to mess it up. Oh, okay. Yep, I've got it. Okay. Rabbi A., thank you very much for this. Something else I can put on my blog. I love sharing things with people, with the blog. I just started this blog about 6 weeks ago, Anne.
Yeah. I think it was one of the
first ones. Oh, gosh. Thanks. No, I thought because you know what? I created the Infidels Are Watching Facebook page in January of 2012. And I have very, very fine people that belong to that Facebook page. And that's Infidels Are Watching. For any of you who are on Facebook, it's a fantastic information sharing site. I have fine people that contribute to it, and some of them I'm going to be bringing on the air. And, of course, one of them is Joe Dan Gorman. He is the man who wrote I Am the Infidel. That's the opening song that you heard. A wonderful man who gave me permission to use his music on my show. I have people like him on there. I have people like Sultan Nish, who is on there. I have people like Christopher Logan of Logan's Warning, who is on there. I have people like Vito Esposito, who is the co-creator of the Radio Jihad Network, on there. There are so many fine people who have joined that Facebook page, Infidels Are Watching. Wonderful contributors. Anne is on there, another fine contributor to that page. I am so proud of that page. And I am so proud that I can promote Anne's work on my blog. That is Red Fox, Infidels Are Watching, blogspot.com. And I'm going to promote what Anne is doing. Like I say, Anne is a true inspiration. And now I know where I can find Ravi's book. And I'm looking forward to it. I am nothing. Oh, Anne, I love reading books. I am such a huge reader. And
I'm going to send you my book.
Oh, please do. And hey, you just asked to join my page.
I was
Infidels Are Watching on Facebook. And welcome to the page, Anne. Welcome.
Huh.
Wow. So, you know what?
Hmm?
Just tell people again what your email address is so that people who are not in the chat room can hear it if they listen in, when they listen in archive. How can they get in touch with you?
There. But please don't call me Lisa. I go by Ann. It's Lisa Ann Vanderleest.
Ah, gee. Lisa, okay. Lisa Vanderleest at ATC.net, but you are Ann. Yeah.
I am Ann.
That is Ann. And you know what? I know that. And by the way, we forgot something, Ann.
What did we forget?
You know what we forgot?
Uh-uh.
Splat.
Oh, Jeff. You so missed. You can't aim anymore, but that's after getting me in the ear yesterday.
You always duck on me.
You got me in the
ear. You're so unfair.
The tips.
Oh, man. Anne and I, we better explain to the listeners what we're talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, Anne and I, we have had the world's longest cyber snowball fight going. And as a matter of fact, we were in a chat room one day, and the radio host actually had to tell us to knock it off.
That was Adrian.
Because we were lobbing snowballs at each other back and forth like crazy in his chat room. He's like, you guys, stop that.
Yeah. I remember the time we were going to get Rabbi, and Rabbi ducked out. Remember that? Yeah, he had an excuse. He had to go in the other room for no good reason whatsoever. We'll still get you yet, Rabbi. We'll still get you. But yeah, I think we should call
World
Records because people get
absolutely. You know what, though? We do have to get in touch with Guinness and get ourselves registered as having the longest snowball fight in cyber history because, believe me, we have. Gee, we must have started this in October of 2012.
Yeah. I don't know. It was
somewhere around there.
You guys didn't have snow yet or something. Oh,
you know what? I think it's even longer than that because spring came about and we had to resort to mud balls because the snow was all gone. But you're right. You're good. You're getting very artful. You're dodging my mud balls quite nicely. But you know what? Anne and I were very polite about it, though. We do not throw ice balls, just the snowballs and the mud balls. There you go.
I want to live for the next for the next shot.
Oh, absolutely. That one I certainly understand. But you know what? I am going to let you go, and I want to thank you, Anne, very much for joining me. I'm going to start wrapping up the show in a minute.
We're going to have to Skype sometime. It's so good to be able to go ahead and just talk to you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah, talking to you is just like talking with an old friend, and we could talk forever, and we do on Facebook, definitely. You are probably, like I say, one of the kindest, most warm women I have ever met in the artistry that you do with the family of with the family plaques and everything. It is wonderful art that you do. And you, like I say, you are an inspiration, and people with disabilities can really change the world. And I don't mean people with disabilities per se. I just mean people like you who has a disability. Your strength and how you get to, through doing the work that you do for the enjoyment of our eyes that we can proudly display on the front of our houses or in our kitchen, on our wall, where the hub of entertainment takes place and people look at it and go, that is beautiful. And I am so proud to say my friend Anne did that. That is Anne, my friend, the artist.
With the help of Hashem, without him, I can't do anything. But just to let you know, I just nabbed those pictures that I needed to do the next plaque for you with the three of them on it. I'm going to post them in the Custom Family site so that you can see which pictures I'm looking at. I got two.
Oh, Anne, okay.
I told you I was going to go see pictures, so you're going to be all set up.
All right. It's fantastic. Oh, yeah. And something else that I enjoy that Anne made for me, my beautiful scarf.
See, now that's something almost any old woman can do.
Oh, I just love that scarf.
They just don't know it, but they love people too. So if you have a mother or a grandmother who's elderly or disabled, I usually call it crippled because I am able to have somebody reach something off the top of my shelf if I need to.
Mm.
And there's everybody's been given gifts and abilities by Hashem, make good use of them. But if your mom or, you know, your dad or your grandpa or what have you, there's all kinds of things they do for people during therapy. They teach them how to go ahead and make wood crafts and stuff. They can bring them home and sell them online. I'm not the only one. I want to see other people not be in nursing homes. They could be able to make enough to have their own place and just get assistance or have somebody move in with them like I've got with Mullet.
You're getting yelled at in the chat room. Roger is saying, old my butt. And you're his favorite friend.
Roger, you're a punk. You are a kid. You are... I have 6 months on you, and that's right. I am older than you. You are a kid. Anyway, you can get people back at home the way you didn't used to find nursing homes unless it was a desperate situation.
Right.
People with their parents and grandparents and gained so much from them. I remember an old woman that used to read stories to us kids. She had just about every different children's book there was. I remember Lady and the Tramp distinctively. Why take that away? Why take
Absolutely.
Away the wisdom that they learned over all those years? I'm not as old. I'm crippled instead of old. But I learned a lot over the years that I've got. And if I could sit up for a bit, I'd teach other people how to paint these plaques. You know, share it. If I could be up, I'd have a kiln and do ceramics. Let people paint their own.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that and sell. There's so many things they can do. And
but what you do and how you're, like, you're doing it, though, Anne. You are really doing it. You are so out there, and people are so aware of what you do. They are so proud, and you should be very proud that you are getting the word out. I have never come across paintings so unique and so beautiful as the ones that you do. I am so proud to own one. And thank you for doing that for me on the Facebook page. I will look for those photos. And, yes, we will have a discussion because I'm really going to put you to work when I order my new plaque because, like I say, I have a big, huge wall in my country kitchen, and your plaque is prominently displayed on it. But I can move it over a little bit and find room for my new plaque.
I think they'll look good.
Thank you.
I hope
so
I
much. Can. You bet. Thanks. Thanks for calling. Well, thanks for agreeing to be my host.
Oh,
or my host. Thanks for agreeing to be my guest today. I know you're a very busy lady, but thank you for finding the time to join me today and share what you do with my listeners. I know they appreciate it.
You're
very
welcome.
Much.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks, Anne. I'll talk to you later. Ladies and gentlemen, that was my dear friend, Anne Vanderlees, artist extraordinaire. She is one heck of a lady, and what she does is phenomenal. Please get in touch with her and order your painting. Like I say, intricate, very detailed, very lifelike. I look at mine, and I see Loki. That is my Loki. Anne painted my Loki for me. I am going to shut down the show in a minute, though. But I do have some announcements that I want to make. First of all, I want to apprise you that there is a brand new radio host on Blog Talk Radio. His name is Randy L. Noble, and you can hear him right here. He will be back January, Kelly, wake up. He will be back on July 18th, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. I believe that's the time slot he's going to do, is 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 2 p.m. CT time. But he will be back. You probably heard his debut show right here last week, and that is The Cross in the Desert. Randy L. Noble is an author extraordinaire. His website is The Cross in the Desert. That is the name of his program, The Cross in the Desert. You can find him in my public feed, of course, right here, Red Fox Blogger. I also want to share with you a programming note that there is another new program out there, The Conservative Cauldron, and that host is Becky Noble, and you can hear her Friday evenings at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So please check out both of those shows. They are fantastic shows. I also want to share with you the Radio Jihad Network. This is a fine site, and you can find the Radio Jihad Network programs right here on Blog Talk Radio 7 days a week. As a matter of fact, there is a show tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and that is the Dito Esposito Show. So make sure you are here on Blog Talk Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern Time to listen to the Dito Esposito Show. On Tuesday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, we have the Andrew Bisoid Show. Well, not we, they have it. On Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, they have the Eliza Jane Show. On Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the Gadi Ailman Show, American Akbar. And you can hear Ravi A on there as well. On Friday, this is to be announced, but coming soon, the Lisa Marie Johnson Show with Atom will be joining you on the airwaves very soon to be announced. On Saturday, we have Usama Dakdok. You can hear him at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we have the Uncle Dave Show. And I keep saying we, but you know what? I'm speaking as a collective we. Because I'm very proud of the Radio Jihad Network. I'm very proud of all the shows out there that are bringing you the news about Islam. So, yes, as a collective we, it's all of us. The Red Fox Blogger, my show, bringing you the news of what is going on in the world of Islam. Because nobody else out there is doing it. The mainstream media is not doing it. There are a lot of sites out there, though, that you can visit to find the truth of what Islam is. You know, like I say, I do this show, I do my best. I just try to bring you the truth. So does the Radio Jihad Network. The Right Ring Redneck Radio Rag with Uncle Dave, revealing the truth about Islam with Usama Dakduk, Freedom Quest with Eliza Jane, Inside the Muslim World with Andrew Bisoid, the Radio Jihad Show with Vito Esposito, and revealing the truth about Islam. They're all, and I just repeated that, but that's all right. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And coming soon, the Lisa Marie Johnson Show with Atom. Try to listen to these programs and try to get yourself informed, because like Vito says, we are striving to educate. This is what we do. This is what we dedicate ourselves to doing. We are bringing the news right to you. We are totally committed to exposing this Islamic underbelly that lives amongst us. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you very, very much for joining me today. I am forever grateful to Anne, like I say, taking her time to visit my show and spend time with me and with you. Like I say, Anne is a wonderful person, a wonderful friend, and a wonderful human being. I am so proud to promote her and her artistry and what she does. I'm proud to promote all of you out there who are making a difference. There is a gentleman in my chat room. His name is Eric. Eric from Iowa. He's another one who is committed. He was the man behind organizing a counter rally in Dearborn, Michigan for June. I think because of people like him, the Dearborn Fest was canceled this year. I think it's because of people like Eric who did that. People like me, people like you out there who are letting Islam know that we are here and we're fed up and we're not putting up with it anymore. You guys are the best. You guys, have a great night. And I will see you back here on Friday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. All right? Now remember, get out there and fight the good fight. And remember as well, it's your country. Take it back. See you on Friday. ¶¶